After waiting in the proa for 2 hours, Pigafetta, Elcano, and the others were rewarded with the spectacle of, in Pigafetta's words, 2 elephants with silk trappings and 12 men, each of whom carried a porcelain jar covered with silk in which to carry our presents. The members of the delegation were invited to mount the elephants, and from their swaying eyries they surveyed the landscape. Their grins could be readily imagined. The elephants lurched forward, carrying the members of the armada toward the dwelling of the governor. While, said Pigafetta, 12 men preceded us afoot with the presents in the jars. Reaching their destination, the elephants knelt, discharging their astonished passengers, who immediately sat down to a great feast. After they ate and drank their way into a state of pleasant stupefaction, they were treated, said Pigafetta, to cotton mattresses, whose lining was of taffeta, and the sheets of cambeia. It was the first night the men had slept on mattresses and linen since they had left Seville, but few remained awake long enough to savor the sublime comfort, because they fell into a deep sleep. As they slept, servants constantly tended large candles fashioned from white wax and oil lamps, adjusting the wicks and finally snuffing them when the sun rose. After their second night ashore, the delegation rode by elephant back to the ocean and boarded their crude, confined ships. The familiar creaks filled their ears, and the familiar reek of stagnant water filled their nostrils. Not everyone returned, however. According to Gines de Mafra, only 4 men made it back to the fleet, while 3, the 2 Greek sailors and Carvalho's son, remained ashore. De Mafra forgot to mention that Elcano and Espinosa were also among the missing. The Europeans suspected that they were all being held against their will and anxiously awaited their safe return. Shortly after dawn on July 29th, more than 100 proas, organized into 3 groups, appeared out of nowhere, bearing down on the armada. For the first time since the massacre, the crew feared for their lives. They broke out their halberds, crossbows, and arquebuses, knowing that they were badly outnumbered because each proa carried a full complement of warriors. To complicate matters, 2 great junks had anchored just behind the armada during the night. It now appeared that the proas intended to drive the armada toward the junks, whose crew would overwhelm the Europeans and take them as prisoners, or worse. Pigafetta wrote, "Upon catching sight of them, imagining that there was some trickery afoot, we hoisted our sails as quickly as possible, abandoning an anchor in our haste." As the armada began to gain speed in the water, some crew members jumped aboard the junks and captured 4 warriors. The men-at-arms fired their weapons at their adversaries as the armada turned its guns on one of the huge junks. They ordered the junk to drop sail, and when her captain refused, the Europeans opened fire at the rudder. Still, her crew refused to comply. The Europeans swarmed aboard the junk, where they discovered that her captain was not the murderous pirate they had imagined. He said that he had served the King of Luzon, and that he had been cut off from the rest of the ships by a storm. He had resolved to call on it to repair his vessel, since the local king was a relative of Luzon's king. After that, Carvalho and the captain fell into secret conversation, to the dismay of the armada's officers, who had risked their lives to disable and board the junk. In hushed tones, the wily captain offered Carvalho jewels, 2 cutlasses, and a dagger with golden hilts and guards inlaid with many diamonds, said Pigafetta, all for his personal use. The gifts had their intended effect. Carvalho, said Pigafetta, released the junk and its people, something which everyone later regretted, because they saw that under their poor-looking cotton garments, most of those men were wearing silk clothes with gold embroidery. Pigafetta recognized the transaction as a simple case of bribery, and his opinion of Carvalho, never high to begin with, fell several notches. Had they held the captain hostage, Pigafetta believed, Raja Sirapada would have paid a tremendous ransom for him, far more than the bribe that Carvalho had accepted. As Pigafetta interpreted local politics, the captain was needed to battle the heathens who threatened the Raja's Muslim empire. The matter did not end there. The extent of the Europeans' confusion became apparent when Raja Sirapada revealed that the Proas had no intention of attacking the Armada. They were actually on their way to attack the Arabs' enemies when the Armada got in the way and thwarted their battle plan. Pigafetta said, "As proof of that statement, the Moros showed some heads of men who had been killed, which they declared to be the heads of heathens." Once they realized their mistake, the Armada's officers awkwardly struggled to make amends with the Raja. At the same time, they requested that the detained men, including Carvalho's illegitimate son, be returned, but Raja Sirapada refused. He had lately pampered the Europeans, treating them to elephant rides and mattresses, to feasts and gifts of precious jewels. He had even granted them a personal audience, and they had repaid his generosity by meddling in his internal affairs and letting the troublesome captain go. As a result, the Raja insisted on holding his hostages, at least for the present. Carvalho responded with an insult of his own. He decided to keep 16 of the prisoners they had captured at sea, as well as another prize, 3 extraordinarily beautiful women. He declared that he would present them to King Charles, a plan that the other officers enthusiastically seconded. Magellan had always forbidden the presence of women and slaves, his own excepted, aboard the ships because he believed that their presence would become divisive, and Carvalho's captives proved Magellan's belief correct. Soon everyone on board Trinidad was aware that Carvalho had turned the women prisoners into his personal harem, and he was busy taking liberties with all 3. This behavior so incensed the other officers that they muttered threats to kill Carvalho, who bartered for his life and his harem with liberal gifts of gold and jewels from the loot he had received from the captain of the captured junk. In the end, Carvalho was spared, and he even kept his harem, but he lost all authority in the eyes of his men. As the officers realized, if they took bribes and maintained harems, they would become pirates themselves. Carvalho's unscrupulous behavior made Pigafetta long for Magellan's icy sense of duty and discipline. Without those driving forces, the expedition's sense of moral imperative melted away amid the luxuriant Indonesian heat. At length, the Raja released 2 hostages, Elcano and Espinosa, whom the messengers promptly returned to the waiting fleet. But where were the others? Elcano and Espinosa explained to Carvalho that the 2 Greek sailors had decided to desert. The story seemed unlikely, but there was no way to confirm it. Magellan, had he been alive, would have immediately launched a search for the deserters, but Carvalho did not lift a finger. He was naturally more interested in the fate of his young son. With long faces, Elcano and Espinosa said that they had heard the boy had died ashore, but they did not know for certain. That was only the beginning of Carvalho's misfortune. On September 21st, 1521, the other officers decided to replace him. The change of command did not amount to a mutiny, and Carvalho was neither attacked nor restrained. He was simply told to step down, and he did, returning to his former post as pilot.